Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we have Sammy Elliott King. If you don't follow Sammy on Twitter, you should. That'll be down in the description, but he's been posting some epic graphs of the growth of his relatively new site in the personal finance space. He's got a graph that's essentially shooting up, and it's only around 18 months old, but really kind of 12 months old since he's been really focusing on the content on there. But we go into his processes, how he's done that. He reveals his site on the podcast as well, so you can take a look at it yourself. And he puts his success not only down to the content that he's written, but with digital PR down through Niche Website Builders, which you can also check out. And that has really boosted his site as soon as he got those links from the big news agencies there. But we also go into not just building your website, it's more about building your brand, what he's doing outside of the blog posts to build that traffic and build that brand awareness. Things like YouTube Shorts, how he's going about doing his YouTube Shorts, his Instagram Reels and his TikTok videos, how he's doing those slightly differently to his YouTube Shorts, but also going into his newsletter, what his plans are there and what he's doing there with his automations and a whole lot more. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast today. Sammy Elliott King, welcome.
Hey, James. How's it going?
It's good. Thank you. Obviously, you've been rising up the Twitter ranks in the SEO circles, I would say, especially with how much you're posting and the engagement you're getting. So I think most people might know you from Twitter. And if they don't, maybe run through a little bit of your background there and what you're currently doing, and we'll dive straight into it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So obviously I am a marketer by trade. So I've kind of fallen into this niche site game because I wanted to build a brand. And as part of that brand was building a site out. I've been doing marketing for years. I've started many startups, mainly in hospitality spaces. So I'm a big brand guy. I like putting bums on seats and getting people to visit websites and stuff like that. So, just now like sharing some of my knowledge on Twitter, and people seem to enjoy it. So it's good fun, man.
Ah, awesome. Sorry, you can hear our little baby crying in the background. She's almost 3 weeks old. And that's all right. That's all good. So do you want to maybe run into... or dive into a little bit about your current site? I know one of them is in personal, one of your sites is in personal finance. That's, I guess, your main case study you post on Twitter. Maybe let's start there and we can go from there. Obviously, maybe let's start with why personal finance? Because most people would look at that and be like, no, there's no way in hell I'm going to that niche. It's so competitive. But obviously, you found a way in there because your graph looks very nice.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's slightly different, really, because I looked at this first off as a problem. You know, I didn't really understand this whole niche site world, like 18 months ago. I didn't even know it existed. and so for me, it was like, I was actually building a brand. I was trying to solve a problem. So like my story comes from deep in debt throughout my 20s, you know, partied a lot early 20s, and then like woke up to reality mid 20s with a shed load of debt, and taught myself personal finance basically and how to get out of that. And then over the years I've just been helping so many people, and then during the pandemic it kind of kicked off to the point where it was like every little question, you know, because I was obviously around, everyone was around, they wanted to, and a lot of people wanted to find out about investing and getting into, you know, was thinking about their money because they had, you know, it all cut off all of a sudden. And I was like, there's this big problem here where people can't relate to the sites that are currently out there or the brands or the influencers that are out there in that space. And I was like, right, how can I turn this on and become like the person to go to? Or so I created Up the Gains. So I'm happy to reveal it because my face is everywhere on it. And Up the Gains is it's a personal finance site. We're dedicated to helping people invest, save, make money online. Then I was like, right, I need a website. So I started building a website, and then was like, because I've always been, so I kind of worked my way up the marketing tree, and for so long now I've sat at the top and I've had agencies, SEO agencies and digital agencies reporting into me. So I get the nice fancy reports and I see the keyword rankings, but I never knew how they actually went about and did it. So for me, it was like, wow, okay, I knew all the terminology, but actually making it happen for me was just wild, man. And yeah, there we go. And luckily found you guys and found Spencer's podcast, and went real deep, man.
Awesome. Now I'm looking at your site right now. For everyone listening, that's the site reveal, upthegains.co.uk, exclusive here on Niche Website Builders podcast. Yeah, man, it's such a nice niche to be in because you've got so many opportunities to essentially sell whatever. But do you want to maybe, I know you mentioned brand a lot, we'll dive into that, but I'd like to know how you're monetizing that site currently.
Yeah, so it's straight affiliates at the moment with some digital products. And so we rely on that to basically grow. And we are getting to the point now where MediaVine is coming into play. And I've been quite careful about the way that we position that. I know that there's a big argument of like put a Zoic on there from day one. And trust me, I've like had many like chats with myself over the last couple of years.
I'm the same as you, mate.
But you know, I hear so good things, I hear some really bad things. And yeah, with that in mind, if there's bad things in play for me as a brand guy, I'm like, no, like that's not something I want to do. I'll wait until I'll go on the premium network. And so yeah, that's the decision I've made. Whether or not I'm leaving money on the table is another thing. But so really that's kind of the game. But the overarching thing here of this site is not, you know, for me it's a brand, so I see this as the site is the main driver, obviously with affiliates, but then we're growing the social media channels, we're growing the YouTube channel, we've just started that, we've got the podcast which is 6 episodes in. So we're really seeing this as a multimedia opportunity across many different variables, and that's really for me is the goal here. I want to grow this to be the new nerd wallet for the UK, essentially.
Oh, dude, we're on the same path. It's just speaking my language right now. So let's continue going down this road. But to help the listeners as well, how old is the site and how much traffic is it getting per month now, and how many articles you got on there?
Yeah, so the site is, well, officially the domain age is 18 months. When I actually figured out what I was going to do and put some time into it, we're probably talking 9 to 10 months of taking it real seriously. And I had 2 articles on there for 7-8 months while I was figuring out what the hell I was doing, basically. Now we're up to 186 articles, 90% self-written, and few bits I like going out to agencies. And I was, you know, first 50 articles you might as well write off, so let's call it 150. That's kind of the goal. Traffic wise, we're looking, so I had a quick look before the call, so we're 34,000 monthly sessions, so nothing to scream about. But obviously when you're playing in the personal finance space, affiliate commissions are quite juicy, and so you don't need a mass amount of traffic to have a really kind of profitable site. We are 110% up month on month, and it's been growing like that for like about the last 4 months. And I know you're going to ask this question about links later down the line, but it is basically when we started link building, that's when the traffic started to really ramp up.
Are you able to share revenue numbers, or if not, all good, but if you're happy to?
Yeah, no, so they're four figures at the moment, so it's nothing. Okay. Nothing crazy, but again, the growth is matching the traffic, and now yeah. we're monetizing the email list. It is becoming, you know, every little bit that we do is growing the revenue. You can see it going one way, and we've put a real massive emphasis on, you know, EEAT, as we all
yeah.
every podcast is going on about at the moment. Whether or not, you know, it's actually a real thing, but it is required in the personal finance space. You do have to prove that you've done stuff. I'm not a qualified financial advisor. So I need to show real life story as much as I possibly can to showcase the fact that I have the experience to talk about these things. I am eventually going to do those qualifications. It's just, you know, I run a hospitality business and a website, man. So time is not is not something I've got lots of.
No, fair enough. And obviously, you mentioned you also sell digital products on there too. So
yeah.
Who's your target audience? Because you mentioned, obviously, you're in debt in your 20s and you're relating, I guess, to that kind of audience. Is that kind of the niche you've kind of marked out within that personal finance space?
That's a good question. Yeah. So basically, we're going for the person that wants to kind of make a change in their life, but perhaps don't necessarily know how to, or they've tried investing and it flopped it completely because they put all their money on Tesla, for example, and it crashed, or Bitcoin, or, you know, any of these other hype fads. We don't do that with these guys. We're not that type of site. If you want to come in there and get crypto tips, you know, there's other sites for
yeah.
it. We're not going to be that site. So we're really kind of trying to take them on that first journey to like kind of be that kind of helping, guiding hand. And then we can walk with them all the way up their kind of ladder. So whether or not they need to figure out how to budget, how to do an emergency fund, you know, how to think and start thinking about investing, whether or not they want to go in depth about it. And we've got an academy on there so they can like start from what is a stock right up to like more technical terms, whether or not they want experts to manage it for them or whether they want to do it themselves. So we kind of help them make those decisions. And that's the goal with the content, basically.
Right. So you said you have an academy. Is that a paid thing or is that the free content?
No. So the plan would be to get that monetized. So
okay.
we wanted to put a free version out initially. This is all about trial and error for me. You know, because the site and personal finance as a niche is so broad, but I purposely did that. So when I made the site, I created what I call the hubs first. You know, many people say go after the long tail keywords, and yeah, that's great in certain niches. But I was looking at this as a 5-year project rather than, you know, I need to sort of turn a profit within, you know, 9 to 12 months by getting a shit ton of traffic. So I built out the, like, what is a stock? What is investing? You know, I built out the make money online. I wrote how to make money online as my first couple of articles, because I knew that the foundations is where this site would win, because you come onto the homepage and then you go on to a journey into a hub. And that's going to be the question that you want. You know, they're the pillars of the site, and then you can direct all of your traffic and your internal linking up into those areas.
Yeah, I really like that approach too, as well with my own sites. I don't worry so much about competition because I know I'm going to have to cover it anyway. So if I cover the big one, I'm going to cover it regardless, and then all the other ones are just going to I'm just going to keep adding those internal links as I hit the other pages as well, rather than just kind of spamming a whole bunch of zero volume, you know, keywords on the site and kind of just going randomly wherever. Then at least it can be a little more targeted with what you're doing. It sounds like you're going down that road too.
It's totally right, man. Like, you kind of got to do that to understand your audience as well, because once you start building out those topical silos, then you really need to understand you're not going to, especially when you've got, say, 3 or 4 categories, you need to look at the one that's necessarily working right now for the site and then start to work out that way. And by doing that, what that's allowed us to do is really scale every category properly by bringing in the right writers. Now we're really ramping up investment into the site, that's how we did it. We built foundations first and then moved outwards.
I think as well, if you're writing a lot of the content, it makes it a little easier, because once you start writing on one topic and you've maybe done the research, then when you go to write the other topics, you've done the research already and you can kind of pump those out. That's what I've found.
Because you're mentioning every long tail keyword in some sort of variation within the big main topical post, and then you're just writing supporting network posts for that essentially. So,
yeah, for sure. And you've talked about branding a lot, and I think it's it's something that more and more people are talking about, especially with the rise of AI. And I mean, I guess spam and Google's been around for forever anyway. But with the rise of AI, it's making it easier for anyone to kind of get into and create mediocre content, really. So, do you want to maybe dive into kind of your approach of making your site a brand? What does that mean to you to brand a website?
Yeah, so like a brand should be able to function in multiple different channels. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's restricted to a website or an Instagram channel or a YouTube platform. So if you've got a brand, you should be able to operate on all channels which allow you to promote your brand. And that for me was the basis of this. I understood quickly that to help people, I needed to, you know, there's only a certain amount of people that like reading blogs, people like listening, people like watching. And so to create that brand, we need to operate in those types of spaces. You know, we needed a brilliant content strategy, which is why I went heavy on the website early, because SEO is going to take the longest of those kind of of that content strategy. That's the one that's going to really, you know, take its time. It needs to age. But also by doing that, you can start seeing where the traffic's coming from. So you understand what people are searching for and intent, and that can then lead into your short form video content creation and your long form video content creation, and a lot about what you talk about and how you handle yourself on social media as well. So it kind of informs the next phase. And we're kind of getting into what I would call phase two now. The website's built, there's substantial traffic on there, it's making money. And now it's like, right, video time, and let's hit videos hard and heavy. And so I actually was just spending about 2-3 hours before this making my first short form content, which I imagine
I was editing video before this too.
Oh, cool, man. it's quite funny. I've got like 4 or 5 different shirts down there, and I'm like changing shirts before each video and stuff. I'm quite enjoying it.
I don't even bother changing shirts if I'm doing most of it. I'm like, I'm too lazy, man. My editing is just like the basic cutting of whatever it is, put it together. If I have to film 2-3 videos, I wear the same shirt or whatever. I don't care.
I just
release them differently.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a wise move. I mean, it helps when you're wearing a black t-shirt, I suppose. But yeah, man, I that's what I did. I literally, funny you say that, I just pressed order on 3 packs of black t-shirts so I could just wear the same thing. Yeah, it's long. But yeah, I'm, you know, this is the next phase for me, is really kind of honing in on YouTube Shorts, TikTok and Instagram, and taking that next level up. You know, I'm not necessarily someone that loves being on camera. And so, you know, instead of jumping in and making my first 15-minute YouTube video, I wanted to start small, work my way up, because it's quite easy to scale up content. Rather, you know, if you're making 20-second videos and you're making a 30-second, a 40-second, it's quite easy to then make that jump to 2, 3, 5, 10 minutes from there. So if you're, you know, if you're thinking about YouTube, I would start small with the shorts and then work your way up.
Yeah, I think YouTube's becoming more of a, I guess, what would you call it? Like a necessity for niche sites now, just as you mentioned, for branding purposes, but just for longevity purposes as well. Obviously, you can have the Google traffic, but again, we don't want to rely on just that, especially with a lot of the changes that could be coming. But how are you scripting YouTube Shorts? And YouTube Shorts is something, it's not something that I do, because I can't be, I film long form videos and I film podcasts, and I might clip the podcast into shorts. But to sit there and film a short after already doing a long form video, I can't even keep it under 1 minute half the time. But how are you just creating shorts? Are you scripting it? Are you doing like the crazy cuts and the crazy captioning and stuff like that too?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm working with a video editor. He's amazing. So he's done a lot of this type of stuff in this space, and that really does help. So I just record line for line each bit of content, make sure I'm not like in a weird position than I was in the previous take. So kind of just sit still and use your hands to kind of articulate yourselves. And then, yeah, scripting wise, I use notes on my phone, man, and I just stand there and you use time where, you know, you're either in the bath or doing something in the bathroom, whatever it might well be. It's good time to like write a short script because it, you know, it is only 8-9 lines of punchy text. And then I write, I just go back through and re-edit. And whatever that might be, it might actually be that a blog post. And I'm basically taking, someone said to you, I've got a gun to your head and you've got to tell me about this in 30 seconds. That's kind of what I'm trying to get my mind frame into when I'm writing that script. Everything has to have a hook and an ending as well. So you always want to try and drive them in to do something at the end, whether that be follow you, but it also could be mentioning a buyer's guide on your website that they can then drive that traffic into. So if they like that video, they're going to do that.
Have you published any shorts so far?
No. So I've just been doing, just today is my first day actually of filming. So I've got 64 videos scripted and ready to go.
Holy shit. Okay.
Hitting hard, man, I'm going for it. Cause I like working in batches. Like same with the podcast, I recorded like 20 episodes within like 3-4 days. And then I know it's done.
Are they solo episodes?
With guests. Yeah, it was
it's
wild, man. But then I know it's banked and done. And everything in personal finance, we will start sort of more current and relatable sites kind of content. But for now, most of it is evergreen. You know, what I'm teaching you today will probably still be relevant in 5 years' time. So if I'm talking to these financial influencers on the podcast, then everything they're saying is more just fundamental basic lessons rather than, you know, what's hot in the market right now. So we're way more educational than current news anyway. So I think that's been easier to bulk things forward. And obviously because, you know, Monday 9 to 5, I'm in London hustling for a hospitality business. I've got to do what I've got to do, man.
Dude, that sounds crazy busy. But do you have are you going to have like a YouTube posting schedule, or are you kind of just going to post kind of as you do them or when you feel like it, things like that?
Yeah. So we're going for 3 a week, basically done quite a lot of research with this over the years. And essentially your post kind of has a 48-hour lifeline to it. A lot of people don't see a lot of TikTokers will post 3, 5, 6, 7 times a day, and great, you know, they're going for volume growth. I'm going for sort of sustainable growth, which I actually physically can keep up. So three a week, 2 reels, which will be educational reels, and then 1 reel, which is the same as what you do, James, is like where you just take little snippets of the best bit of the podcast essentially and put that on the channel as a kind of promo trailer essentially for the podcast. So that would just be the strategy there. And I've seen it work so many times across all the brands that we do. You know, I've taken channels from zero to hundreds of thousands in under a year just by doing that. So sometimes people just say that you need to post loads and you need to post all the time. I don't think so. You just need high quality and regularly.
That's a good point. That's a good point too, because I think it's Income School's YouTube guy, Nate, on Channel Makers. I don't know if you've watched any of his stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he did some research on posting schedules and how posting schedules don't impact reach, growth, et cetera, et cetera. It's more about, as you mentioned, the actual videos themselves, the title, the thumbnail, et cetera, et cetera. But how are you doing thumbnails for your shorts? That's a question, because I know some people do, but or are you just taking the straight YouTube short and using that?
So we'll just clip the hook. So it will be the subtitle hook at the end of that with the kind of facial expression, which is normally a like you or hey or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here? And so it already looks interesting to the person if they see that. So instead of creating thumbnails every time, because it can get long, but definitely for the podcast, we have thumbnails. And for longer YouTube videos, we 100% will too. But I think for the shorts, they can kind of get away with it.
You mentioned some of the other YouTube channels that you said you've worked on that have kind of blown up. what's your experience with, short videos and them either converting, visiting websites, generating leads and things like that? Do they, are shorts, even though they get obviously a high volume of views, do they convert that well compared to, say, a long form video with less?
It's a good, definitely not. YouTube shorts don't convert anywhere near as well as long form content. And, you know, I would go as far as saying 5-10%, maybe even less. And that you're going for, with shorts, I think, especially on YouTube, it's different on TikTok and Instagram. You're going for a pure brand play. You just want people to see that you're doing stuff. Really, you should be combining it with long form content posting at the same time. But as I said, like, I'm just taking it step by step for now. I think what the strategy for me will be to do is take the short form into long form. So it's almost a trailer to get them in. So they physically need to go and do that action and click on the longer form video, because I've left it with a cliffhanger or something along those lines. So it's about how you're structuring that content. And that tends to be what we do with some of the other channels that we've done, is kind of cliffhanger type approaches work really well.
So are you using the same videos that you film for shorts on TikTok and Instagram as well?
So we're doing like minor tweaks to try it, because they do know, you know, TikTok will catch on. So we try different things, i.e. different background music, different sound effects for the, because we have like short, quick cuts. So I may say a line and then a piece of film or an effect comes over. So I just change that. So you might have two versions. Okay. And then also posting, if you post them all at the same time on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube Shorts, TikTok will clock that you're doing that. And then you just won't see, no, they'll start just like bumping down your traffic. So how you get over that is you post a day early on TikTok for 3 or 4 videos, and then bang, you get all your traffic back.
Shit, okay. I didn't realize that.
They know, TikTok, man, it's AI.
Chinese company, eh?
They know, they're listening.
Yeah, throttling us. Have you noticed any changes with YouTube algorithms in terms of reach or anything, or is YouTube still cranking as hard as it was?
Yeah, it's still the daddy. You know, I think you've got to look at it like that. You know, one of the big things for us is to get a lot of educational content into the academy and onto the YouTube channel and into the blog content. So, you know, pretty much every article I write has got a YouTube video ready and nice. Scripted for me, which just makes that process a lot easier. You know, if I'm looking at this trying to start a YouTube channel from day one, you know, I'd be like, well, the hell do I start? But if you've got a blog post, you've got the script.
That's true. How will you differentiate then between the content you post on the blog and YouTube and then the content that's in the academy? Because obviously if something's behind a paywall, it's got to offer, well, it should offer something, I guess, further detailed or slightly different to what they can get for free. I mean, some people, I guess, just repackage what's there into a logical format and then sell it as a course or an academy. But what's your take with what you're going to do there?
It's a good point. I think what we're going to go down the line of is a bit more lifetime access rather than a subscription-based model. Because it's an academy, it's like it's almost a course, but you could, because it'll have multiple levels within it, you could join and be a level 3, but then still find it valuable. So it's very difficult to price it. And because we're going for such a broad market base, it's again, we don't know what kind of person will be coming into that initially. It's just an idea at this phase, but I think that's probably the model. It's just you get access and it costs X amount. Whether or not we could monetize that into a monthly recurring revenue stream would be fantastic if we could get that going.
And then you're beholden to creating your content or providing value every month as well, which is the conundrum I'm always going through too. I've got two memberships, and man, it's not easy when you start doing memberships. You go, oh shit, like it's something all the time. you have to try and keep people in through new products or having an active community or whatever it is, and keep people rolling through. But I guess
What I liked about your model, which is something that I have been considering, is obviously you get the fighters and the trainers and the coaches to go in there, and that's really cool. And where there's so many amazing financial influencers out there all over the world, and they're all teaching different things, there could be a real good space for them to come in and do a 15 minute or half an hour lecture or a group session, which adds that value. But it's just the kind of putting it together. I think where the site is going to very quickly become this massive beast, you know, with hundreds and hundreds of articles in each section, that is going, firstly, I want to get that right, because that's where the cash and the revenue is going to come from, rather than the membership. But then the membership will be a fantastic add-on revenue when we get it right. So not there yet, man, but definitely thinking about it for sure.
Yeah. Would you ever take a step away from your hospitality business to pursue this?
It's a very good question. Look, I hope they're not listening. All I could say is that obviously there's going to become a point in the very, very near future where I've got quite a big decision to make. And that is just purely because, you know, this is my heart and soul. I've built this baby from the ground up, you know, it's a brand new, fresh domain. And, you know, for me to not see that through would be criminal. I love what I do. I love hospitality. It's an amazing industry, but it is very unforgiving, you know. And this fills up my heart in a different way, if you know what I mean. So, helping people go home pissed in a cab versus helping change their finances, you know, I'm really making a difference in somebody's life, is a bit of a change, but it's certainly something that I'm thinking about for sure, man.
I like the political answer to that.
I think you can work out what I'm saying.
No, it's good. And you mentioned the link building. Your site started growing when you started link building. Tell me about your process. What you ended up doing?
Yeah, so obviously because links play a massive factor in ranking, there's no point us saying that they don't. You know, I completely respect the guys that take the other no link building approach and organic link building coming through. But with personal finance, with the amount of competition that operates in this space, you know, the decent websites that are DR 30 plus are still finding it difficult to find traffic. So I needed authority, and I needed good links. So we're actively doing digital PR with Niche Website Builders at the moment. There you go, cheeky plug. Since we started, I'll shout out Jake. He's amazing from the team there. He really kind of went above and beyond, and you know, we've picked up some real big boy links. And the funny thing is, the first link we got was Metro, big paper here in the UK, and it was actually like a proper interview with myself, which was quite cool. Got it on frame on my wall. And there, literally the day after, you can see in GSC the traffic sort of just ticking along, and literally 2-3 days after, it just goes whoom, boom. And then that's the start of that kind of meteoric rise, which I keep posting on Twitter. The bottom of that rise is that day. So you can just start to see the links really take control. And it was almost like, because I had almost 120 articles on by that point. You could just almost see that the Google just went, yeah, cool, trust him now, and sort of let him start rising up the rankings. And since then, keywords and traffic is just up. It's like a big hockey stick to the right. And, you know, articles that weren't perhaps, you know, wouldn't have been on the KD list for many people starting out and now coming to start to, you know, edge into page one or just creeping into the top of page two. And these are big boy traffic keywords. And so the site is really at this kind of real pivotal point now where it could be pushed over into sort of a very healthy traffic and monthly traffic. So yeah, links have been great. And I went down that route because of the sheer power and size of these links that you're driving. You know, these are Metro, Go Banking rates. the times. You know, you're not going to get these by paying some guy or some website that's doing some guest post outreach for you. You know, I understand that strategy, but that's where I'm building this brand to be this beast. It needs those Forbes and Business Insider type links. Otherwise, it's just not going to cut through.
Yeah, for sure. And if anyone's interested in seeing Sammy's graph, you can check him out on Twitter. He posts that regularly. But tell me a little more, or dive into a little more about the digital PR, because as you mentioned, most people are going kind of down the guest post niche edit route and kind of doing fine with that. But what's involved in the digital PR? So, like, is a piece created for you to send out to journalists, or is it just kind of what you already have on the site?
So there's two ways of doing it. So we're doing some for one of my bars in London at the moment, which is really, really, really interesting. There's a local SEO case study. So we're at this bar. We're in near London Bridge. Bars near London Bridge is a keyword search term with, like, I think 11,000 monthly traffic at the time when we started looking at it. And so what we did is we built a data study. So this was done all of Ahrefs. And so we took Europe's most searched cocktails and we put them into this data study, which we housed on the website. And then we pitched this out to major publications saying, we've got the most searched, Google searched cocktails in Europe. We've picked up some crazy links, drinks business, the caterer. We were on news channels, BBC, Channel 4.
Wow.
It was wild, man. So, and then you can see we went from position 42 to position 11 with this keyword. We're just about to break into this home, page one territory, which for us with these types of keywords, especially with local SEO, the buyer's intent with these keywords are wild, because if you're searching bars near London Bridge, you are most probably a couple of drinks in looking for your next bar. So you're making an immediate decision. And if we're on that list, we've got that traffic and footfall into the bar, and that's organic. And you'll see, we're seeing the growth coming through off multiple keywords now that are, you know, semantically relevant to that bars near London Bridge. We're now ranking for quite a few of those. So that's one way of doing it. The second side of it is newsjacking. So this is a really great thing that that Jake sort of did this video on. I encourage anyone to go and look at it on Niche Website Builders. You can do it yourself. And I personally have picked up a Daily Mirror link off by doing this. So you go on Twitter, there's a hashtag called Journal Request. And Journal Request is basically, it could be looking for personal finance experts, talk about X, Y, and Z topic. You're like, unreal. Tweet them back. Yeah, hey, this is me. And can I send you a DM? Yes. DM them, answer the question, send over your stuff. 2 weeks later, you've got a DR85 link from a major publication. This goes cross niche. There are thousands of niches that they come into and they ask these types of questions. And you can obviously use the Twitter search bar to search for the niche and then the hashtag journal request. And it brings up tons and tons and tons. And if you keep an eye on it, maybe you just got it open, you refresh it once an hour, have a look at it. You know, that's a really good way of just picking up these kind of hot opportunities where the journalist perhaps has just finished their article and wants to pop in and a last minute quote from an expert. and that's like, you know, and that's absolutely gold. And they're the two ways that the digital PR world operates. You know, there is the other side where they'll come up with ideas based on current things and they'll put pictures out based on, you know, what is right now, especially in personal finance. We're coming up to, in the UK, end of the tax year. So it's on trying to make people max out their tax contributions. So we have something out about that at the moment. And we're picking up a couple of links from there. So it really does, it's a game changer. And a lot of the times they will actually build into category pages as well, which is quite helpful. Mm. So, you know, instead of just homepage authority, if you're, you know, you can then say this is from the budgeting team at Amazing Grace, and then they will link direct to category page, and so all of your budgeting articles are then getting some sort of link. Nice. And then that's really helped sort of take off a lot of the articles on the site.
Yeah, so if anyone's interested in digital PR, definitely check out Niche Website Builders. They're doing a great job with Sammy there. But you mentioned the bars in London article, would you ever plan on monetizing that page through lead, like sponsored spots? So a bar would come to you and be like, hey, I want to be number one on that page, whatever, once you're ranking for it?
It's a good question. So we are a bar. So the main name of the goal is for that. Basically, we're trying to then get the bums on seats. So we're then tracking conversions off that into a booking channel.
Gotcha.
So that's the kind of way of doing that. So we wouldn't monetize it like that. It's not, the thing is we're going up against some of the biggest, you know, even the biggest publications to try and get these number one spots. And, you know, they're like the 34 bars best in London Bridge. And it's really difficult to then try and break in through into these. So yeah, we'd love to monetize it in different ways. I think if I suggested putting ads on the site, they'd chop my head off.
No, fair enough. Let's run through, coming back to the blog as well, your editing process, going back and editing old articles. Obviously you mentioned your first 50 might not be up to scratch. Going back and editing articles is probably one of the harder things that, or things that people find more challenging than writing new content. So what's your process behind going back and editing an article?
That's a really good question. We actually put a tweet out about this in the last graph because I've seen a lot of sites get slapped about recently. There's been some of the big guys on Twitter have had their sites, you know, murdered. And what I saw, which seemed to be the correlation across all of the sites, was they were leaving content too long and that for me sparked off this thing in my head. Old content must be updated, whether you like it or not. And so do it. Otherwise they will catch on. And so if that's the case, how do you put systems in place to manage that? So what we did was built out old school Excel, no SaaS related companies involved in this little next phase, pure old school, you know, date of published and date updated. And then you color scheme things as you work through them, and you have them month by month in tabs when they were first posted, and you color the tabs as they're done at the bottom, and then you go background, and it's 6 months. You can't leave an article for 6 months. That's basically what we've set it out to. As that grows, that's going to become harder and harder and harder. But that, you know, as revenue grows in, we'll bring teams in to manage that side of stuff. You know, we've just hired our first VA, and that's going to be something that we do. When we actually edit the article, not that much has to change, especially in personal finance. You do need to check the stats and figures are up to date and update those with relevant new ones. Essentially, percentages will change, fees will change for certain things, which you need to keep an eye on. So you've got to have that up to date. And that's kind of a responsibility that we would have anyway for our audience. If we're giving them the wrong information, we'll get a slap on the wrist, not just from the user, but from, you know, the financial regulators as well. So we've got to be careful there. But when we're actually editing the articles, if the article is what I would say is like 100% done, as in like there is physically nothing we can possibly do, there is always something you can do. You can just take a paragraph and rewrite it. Exactly the same thing. It doesn't necessarily need to have a lot in there that you're updating. All you're doing is refreshing it. So I'll do that, two or three paragraphs. We will either take an image out and put a new one in, or add another image to another section. And then we'll also change the H1, the title, we'll obviously keep the how to do X, ultimate guide. We might change to everything you need to know or something like that. And that will kickstart Google into going, all right, cool, new content here, need to refresh it. They'll see hopefully new data. And then, they've changed around this format on this paragraph here. And that for them, that's an update. You know, you've done your job. If the article is this evergreen piece that you're not really going to change much, that for me is a done job. That should be half an hour's work, absolute max, but you're keeping that content fresh. That's what we're doing.
I like that. I was going to ask you what you see as the minimum kind of update change, but you answered that there. Do you also update the publish date then after that?
So I've been having a hearing about this. I've done it a couple times, and the thing is, I just see this as another thing that eventually Google will find out. they're smart guys. So, you know, eventually they'll, it's like AI content. I personally believe they will eventually go, no. So it's one of those things that eventually I feel like with date publishing, they will go, hang on a sec, don't really like that. And by doing it, you're potentially opening yourselves up to that opportunity. So I see it as a no. We just have a bit of code, which many people do, and just have the last updated for the user on there. I think that really is much more important, that the user thinks it's fresh. And if you're making those updates, as I mentioned, Google will know that you're refreshing that content. So you don't need to tell them that it's a brand new date.
Does that change the metadata on Google as well? Because obviously when you search something that says it has the date under the title on Google. So if it's best whatever 2023 and it shows that it's 2021 when it was originally published, does that change still even with the last updated?
Do you know what? I don't know. It's a good question. We'll have to find out on that one.
Yeah. I always just hit publish now. I change the date every time I do an update and I say publish now, and it helps every time. So
it does help.
So it does help. Yeah.
It does help. Look, it does help. That's the thing. Like, do it, you know, but I just, it's for me, it's just one of those things that I'm like, as I'm going back to that thing I said earlier, if I've got a slightly bad feeling about it, don't do it. And that's like, my mantra. And so far it's been all right. But I'm sure there's something I'm doing on that site that Google will eventually find out that it doesn't like.
Standard. Yeah. You talked about ease as well. So ease, obviously hot topic as always. You've done digital PR. So that's kind of like the ultimate ease. You've had your name on these big newspapers compared to your site, but I get one of the foundational things that you did before those kind of links came in to try and establish that trust and expertise, etc.
Yeah. So every single article has a comprehensive author bio. A lot of people put it at the bottom. I put it at the top, especially within personal finance, building that trust. They don't know me. They've just landed on that Google search term. So I need to build the trust with them immediately. And so I do that there. We also have a disclaimer as well, and it warns them about investing or anything money related, and that we don't assume responsibility for their decisions. That's another thing that we have there before they've even got into any kind of content. So for me, that's really, really important on every page. Then our about section is comprehensive. We have our mission, our statements, contacts, details, our business numbers, and obviously a bio about myself. We are just about to phase that out, putting in the contributing writers now who we've just onboarded last week. And so we've made a real conscious decision to bring on financial writers who have featured in a major publication, so we can then get that to that again. So they've written for the Financial Times, or they've written for X, Y, and Z brand, NerdWallet, or blah, blah, blah. So we've got that kind of like, oh, okay, these guys are legit. This content is legit. So that's what we've really done. And then it's really about tying everything together. So a lot of our same as schema, making sure that's all pointing to the right places, embedding YouTube videos directly from the channel. These are all types of things which are showing Google, right, cool, this guy's across multiple variables. He knows what he's talking about. He's got a podcast. He's got a YouTube channel. You know, we're happy with that. Interestingly as well, the shop, I think, is a big factor. So naturally, if you're like selling products, you know, they could be absolute dynamite dog shit. But like the fact that you are selling products that is relevant to the site, I feel like that does give you a bit more trust as well. Because why would you have gone to those lengths to put those products out? Obviously, if everything's ticking, that's one of the boxes I feel like is further down the list that that Google goes through. But I feel like it's very important. So, you know, even if you've got a one-to-one call up there, or, you know, you've got a food blog and you've got a recipe card that you can print or something like that, even if it's 99 cents or, you know, a couple of pounds here or there, like, I feel like that adds quite good value to your site.
How are you selling your products then through your shop? Is it, are you using Shopify or using like WooCommerce or
straight WooCommerce? And then we funnel most of the traffic that gets to those will either come from articles. You know, we embed products into most of the articles that we have. The digital products is a massive part of the growth of this business, I feel like, because, you know, for the one budgeting sheet that I've got out, there could be multiple currency versions of it. There can be, you know, freelance calculators. There's so many things that, you know, we've got the calculators on the site as well, and monetizing those as well to use them as well is a kind of a next phase for me. And there's so much we can do in that space. That's going to help people for sure.
You mentioned as well with your newsletter, you mentioned about monetizing that. Are you monetizing just with your own products? Are you talking about monetizing the newsletter with sponsorships and things like that too?
Yeah, so the plan is massive sponsorships for this. You know, I've seen it done, and that's the area we want to play in. Obviously, we're only a couple thousand subs at the moment, so nothing to shout about. So we know exactly the power of that email. At the moment, it's pure affiliates. When you sign up, you go into a 5-day automation, which if you click on certain things, you go into different channels of automation, essentially, which then feeds you different emails. Eventually with the main goal of you buying a digital product, or clicking on a best of guide and trying to find your new investing app or new budgeting app based on the person that you are and how you're responding to those emails. That's the main way that we sell the digital products at the moment. It comes through the emails, and we do the standard lead magnet into sign up.
Do you want to maybe give an example, run through kind of how that automation works? So you have the 5-day automation, then obviously they click, they go into another one. Do you want to kind of mention how and when they pitch these products within those automations as well?
Yeah. So I listened to a ton of podcasts on this, and the kind of main thing that came out of them for everyone, kind of maybe save you a bit of hassle and time if you're thinking about going into a rabbit hole that deep, because man, it goes deep. The main thing, basically what we do is we have a standard welcome email. Everybody receives it at the end of that email. It's almost a very big thank you. We're not selling them anything at all. We can drive them into homepage. So if you want to start your journey here, click here, and they come into homepage. Second page is about kind of getting them to start a relationship with me. So it's all about me, my story, why I'm doing what I'm doing, why I'm there to help you. And the analogy that we use is that we're their guide. You're the hero. This is something I've really been sort of looking into at the moment, and they're the hero of the story, and we're the guide, and we cement that there with myself. And then the third one is where it gets interesting. So that's where we first seed in the products, and if they don't go for them, they then get fed out into another channel, which then might feed them, which then feeds them, say, best of guides. And again, if they don't click, they then go into a further email, which then gives them a discount to the digital products which they've just seen. So we then try and recapture them again a second time after that. Obviously, if they click and go through, everything's gravy and they go onto the list, but they still get sent the best of guides anyway. It's just structured, and the tone of things are structured quite differently. If you're making a decision about either to click or to buy, because we can see that through the email, you get fed kind of different offers or different pages, which we feel like will be relevant for that person if they're not buying that one thing.
No, I really like that. Did you get that hero guide thing from, hang on, I got the book. It's probably by my bed now. Building a Story brand, I think it is. Is that the one?
I don't know. No. Do you know why I heard that? It was Pat Flynn, Passive Income. He had someone on the other day, Indian guy, can't remember his name. So 4 or 5 episodes back, so you'll be able to find it pretty quickly. But he's all about stories and how if you cement yourself as if you're basically the hero and I'm the greatest, I'm doing everything for you, that person just doesn't like it. And it goes back to basically storytelling. The hero stumbles and falls, he finds the guide, He then goes through this trial and tribulation to then find his, you know, path and glory, and finally defeats the thing that knocked him down in the first place.
Yeah.
Which, and if you have that kind of analogy and way of thinking, when you structure these things, it does sort of take you as the writer out of that kind of like godly territory, which you can sometimes find yourself in when you're writing. And if you look at it from that way of serving them rather than telling them, it changes everything.
No, for sure. Writing for, I guess, the benefits of the person reading versus saying like what you've done or what your product is, etc. Kind of makes a big change. Yeah, I think it's Donald Miller. I think was the author, Building a Story.
Oh, cool.
And I think it walks exactly through all that. It has like the book also has a free website where you can plan it out yourself and stuff like that. So yeah, that's interesting. That one's worth reading for anyone listening to this too. But we've pretty much come to the end of this podcast, Sammy. Do you want to maybe let people know where they can find you and follow what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. I'm at Elard King on Twitter. And if you want to learn about something to change your life with some money, then we're at upthegains.co.uk and upthegainsmoney on all social channels.
Perfect. We'll link those up in the description for anyone listening as well. But thank you for coming on, Sammy, and sharing everything.
Awesome. Cheers, James.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.